All right, welcome to Radio Naturopath. It's the call-in talk show about health and natural medicine. I'm Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, and this is my co-host, Ron Meniza.
Good morning.
If you'd like to participate in the conversation about natural medicine, you can call us at 860-486-9487. That's 860-486-9487. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcasts at whus.org. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. So, a couple of interesting things. I think the direction we're going to go today is all about antioxidants. So, antioxidants are good things for you, and there's a lot of foods that have antioxidants in them, and we can talk about why they're good for you and some nice things that antioxidants are in. The first thing I want to talk about, though, is wine, and I'm not exactly going to talk about why it's good for you. I'll shout out to that as well. So red wine, for example, has a lot of flavanols in it. It has resveratrol in it, and it's good for you in that way. So it has great antioxidants in it, and resveratrol is a pretty incredible antioxidant. It has been shown to cause apoptosis, and apoptosis is the act of cellular breakdown. It's generally cellular breakdown, but we like to have apoptosis when we're talking about cancer. So if you make some random cancer cells in your body and, you know, you have some genetically odd cells that are happening, if you have resveratrol around, resveratrol will look at those cells and it will modify gene expression so that you don't have the expression of these cancer cells. And if you actually have a cancer diagnosis, there are certain cancers that resveratrol can help with. So, you know, there's some good studies on prostate cancer and breast cancer. There's a few actual cancers that resveratrol has been actually studied to be helpful for causing apoptosis. And so it's very benign. It doesn't have, any major side effects. And so it's an easy thing to take. So it is in red wine. Red wine also has been shown in moderation to regulate blood sugar, that you can help to reduce your hemoglobin A1C if you drink it in moderation. So this is the interesting shout out that I wanted to talk about. So I had Megyn Kelly on. Yeah, I did. And she has an interesting series this week called Mommy Burnout. And she was talking about yesterday, she was talking about red wine, or not just wine, but alcohol. How mommies who are very stressed turn to alcohol to help to mitigate their stress. And they're in a gray zone in terms of whether they're actually alcoholics. But what they do is they do their very busy lives. They may have jobs. They're taking care of children. They may be taking care of ailing parents. And, you know, the big thing about mommy burnout is that the mommy is putting herself last. And so having a glass of wine at the end of a hard, stressful day is very reasonable, because you can sit down, cozy up with that nice glass of wine, and it absolutely relaxes you. But the thing is, what happens is, instead of doing the recommended, you know, one glass of wine every other day, you have people doing 1, 2, 3, 4 glasses of wine most days of the week, and possibly with some binge drinking. So and these are people who are still functioning. So is this a gray zone? Are these, some people would consider these people to be alcoholics, and others would say they're kind of in a gray zone. They're using alcohol in a way that's affecting their health, but are they actually alcoholics? Do they need to stop drinking completely? And I'll let you be the judge of whether they need to stop drinking completely. They may or may not. But the fact is that the alcohol could definitely be affecting their health. So alcohol, when you drink it to excess, whether you're actually drinking enough to be considered an alcoholic, or if you're just doing this thing that, because, you know, stressed out mommies drinking wine is a meme. It's everywhere. It's what a lot of people do. And we talk about how much we love that glass of wine. And so in the end, having too much alcohol, if you're doing that, you know, oh, I realize I'm doing, you know, 2, 3, 4 drinks most nights of the week, it's actually affecting your health, whether you consider yourself to be an alcoholic or not. And it's affecting your health in a lot of ways. You have to remember how alcohol affects you. When alcohol gets into your body, ethyl alcohol, your body doesn't look at it and go, oh, oh, this is great stuff, and just sort of process it and let it go. Your body prioritizes getting rid of it, and the main organ that gets rid of it is your liver. So your liver is this incredible organ. It's very large. It takes up a significant portion of your abdomen. It's on, mostly on the right side, but it crosses over a little bit onto the left, and all of the cells in the liver are exactly the same. They all do the same things, and the things that they do are myriad. The liver produces bile. It sends bile along. It processes vitamins. It stores vitamins. It processes sugars and converts them to glycogen and stores them and then releases them when you need them. It helps all of your metabolism. It processes fats. It stores fats. It releases fats when you need them. It does all kinds of detoxification. There's all kinds of compounds that go through the liver, and there's all kinds of enzyme systems that detoxify different compounds in the liver. So the liver is incredible. So it's a very incredible organ, and I'll repeat what my my anatomy professor, Dr. Titchrid, may he rest in peace, used to say. He said that letters should really not be signed, love, Fran. They should be signed, hepatically yours, Fran, because the liver, he thought the liver was more important than the heart. He just thought it was the most important organ in the body. So liver is real important. So when that liver sees alcohol coming through, the first thing it wants to do is get rid of it because alcohol has issues. You have an enzyme called alcohol dehydrogenase. And alcohol dehydrogenase breaks down alcohol into its component parts. It sends it into acetaldehyde, and then it gets converted to vinegar and water, and then finally carbon dioxide and water. And that's how alcohol breaks down by way of alcohol dehydrogenase. And so the problem with alcohol is that that first step, when you convert alcohol to acetaldehyde, nature isn't crazy about aldehydes because they're unstable. Nature doesn't like unstable things. The weird thing about aldehydes is that they have a triple bond. They have at least one carbon that is bonded three times to another carbon. And that's an unstable situation. You would rather that each carbon had its own electrons. The most stable situation is that that carbon is bound once to another carbon, and the other spaces are taken up by either hydrogen or hydroxyl group, or if it's an amino acid, a nitrogen group. But anyway, so you have these two carbons that are bound three times to each other, not a stable situation. So those that aldehyde, if it doesn't get broken down again into the next component, into, you know, vinegar, acetic acid, it's going to break down by way of free radical damage. So it's going to lose an electron from one of those double bonds, and now it's going to have free radical oxidative liability. So anywhere that the alcohol resides, there's a potential for free radical damage. So you have a lot of this detoxification going on in the liver. So what do you think happens if you have oxidative damage in the liver? You have liver cells that are dying. And the liver cells that are dying, they are unable to do their jobs. So you have enough acetaldehyde, you have liver cells that start dying. You have acetaldehyde. So you don't just break down. The alcohol dehydrogenase doesn't just happen in your liver. It happens all over your body. So if you have acetaldehyde going through your brain, then those aldehydes cause free radical damage to your brain. And guess what? You lose brain cells. So anywhere the alcohol hits, it can cause free radical damage. And it can cause changes in the genetic structure. It can cause cellular destruction, and it can also cause genetic changes in the cellular structure, which is why if you drink enough alcohol, the surfaces that the alcohol touches, that is your mouth, your tongue, your lips, your esophagus, your stomach, all of the places that alcohol touches, you can get genetic changes and you can get cancer. So I'm not saying that a little bit of alcohol is when you drink a moderate amount of alcohol. People in the world where there are blue zones, there are places where there are blue zones where people drink moderate alcohol and it makes them healthier. But it's when you cross that threshold into too much, that's when you start to see problems. So here you are, a stressed out mom drinking this alcohol, and the alcohol is causing free radical damage, can cause some free radical damage to your liver and other structures. Now, what are things that stressed out moms are concerned about? They're concerned about having energy. They're concerned about sleeping. They're concerned about maintaining their weight. Well, guess what? It can affect all of those things. And then if you happen to be hypothyroid, it can affect that too. If you're perimenopausal, it can affect that too. It can also affect your sex drive. So how can it affect all those things? Well, first of all, it's going to affect your sleep, because one of the things you need when you detoxify alcohol is you need a whole bunch of B vitamins. And B vitamins do a lot of things in your body. They regulate how your nerves work. They're cofactors for various neurotransmitters, including serotonin. And you need good serotonin function in order to be able to sleep. And so that's one of the mechanisms by which you get insomnia. You have magnesium as a cofactor for its breakdown and also for liver function in general. The liver's not functioning at full capacity, so the magnesium is going to come in and try to push those other detox factors and not going to be as available to calm your nerves. Therefore, you're not going to sleep as well. And so you have to remember that alcohol is a central nervous system depressant, which is why it makes you relaxed right away. But in the long run, you have trouble with sleeping. And here's some of the mechanisms. One of the mechanisms, as I said, is you chew through your B vitamins. Alcohol causes weight gain, and everybody thinks it's the calories. It's not just the calories. It's because it's hijacking your liver, because your liver is now looking at it going, we got to get this alcohol out of here. So you're not as available. Your liver's not as available to manage your glycogen and your sugars and your essential fats so that you can process all of these things and lose weight. If you want to have a healthy functioning metabolism. Metabolism is also key in athletic performance and energy. So you're going to be more tired. Now you're just going to be more tired if you're chewing through your B vitamins, because your B vitamins cause you to have good brain function and good nervous system function. If your nervous system function isn't working as well, you're going to be more tired and your muscles are going to be more tired. You're not going to be able to do stuff as easily. So you got that going on. And, you know, in terms of the weight gain, because your liver is not as available to process fats and proteins and carbohydrates, it's going to be harder to lose weight. The other thing is protein synthesis. So one of the things that the liver does is it assists with protein synthesis. So it takes your amino acids and processes those and then puts together to give you proteins. And so if the liver is not available to do that, one thing is if you're an athlete, you're not going to recover as well. If you're just a regular person who's not necessarily an athlete, you're going to hurt more because you're not going to be able to heal as well. Now, if you happen to be hypothyroid, and it doesn't matter necessarily if you're it's going to be a little different if you have Hashimoto's thyroiditis versus not Hashimoto's. If you happen to be hypothyroid, that excess of alcohol, it's going to affect you directly, because one of the things that happens with your thyroid is your thyroid gland makes T4. It makes thyroxine, and thyroxine stays in your body for a long time. When you take thyroxine, when you make thyroxine, it stays in your body for a long time, and over time, hopefully you're going to convert it as needed to T3, which is active right away, very active, very potent. But if you have no T3, you're not going to have energy, because T3 is the active thyroid hormone that actually pushes your body to do what it needs to do. And so a lot of that conversion of T4 to T3 happens in the liver. So if you're hijacking your liver with a lot of alcohol, if you're taking Synthroid or if you're taking levothyroxine and you're not taking T3 as well, your conversion of T4 to T3 is going to be affected, and you may have good thyroid stimulating hormone TSH values, but your T4 is not going to convert well to T3, and your utilization is not going to be as good because the liver is occupied with detoxifying that alcohol. One of the liver's jobs is to convert T4 to T3. So it's really interesting. And so if you're having issues around muscle rebuilding, when you're hypothyroid, of course, hypothyroidism, you have a lot of different problems because your general metabolism is affected. So if you're wanting to rebuild muscles, tendons, ligaments, then your protein synthesis is affected it's affected anyway because you're hypothyroid, and it's going to be affected more if you drink alcohol. So one of the things that I heard when I was listening to the show was very interesting. A lot of the moms said, I stopped drinking so much alcohol, and they didn't necessarily completely stop alcohol. Some of them did. Some of them went dry, and some of them did not. They just cut way back, and they found that they didn't realize what it was doing to them. They really didn't put together. They just thought that they were running their excessively busy lives, taking care of their kids, getting them here from here to there, doing their jobs, taking care of parents, taking care of the household, doing all the things that moms do. And they would relax with some alcohol, which a lot of women do. And a lot of people do. A lot of guys do it, too. But, like, there's this special thing with mommy burnout because women, we feel like we're the caretakers. So, I don't want to say that men don't caretake, because you definitely do, Ron. But it's a classic thing that we're born to nurture. That is just our... That's our nature, to be very nurturing. Men can be very nurturing too, but because we carry babies in our bodies, we're wired that way. So we feel like we have to take care of, and that's a big thing with mommy burnout. You take care of everybody first before yourself. And so that glass of wine is a nice way to relax and settle down, and you settle down right away. But the thing is, if you overdo it, all of these functions that you have can be affected. And a lot of moms are interested in having energy, getting good sleep, and maintaining their weight. And if they're hypothyroid, which a lot of people are, they want their thyroids to work well. So it affects all of those things. And, you know, if you drink too much alcohol, like I said, you increase your risk of cancer, unfortunately. Also, reproductive function, I didn't hit on that. One of the things is that your reproductive function, women will complain they have less sex drive. Now, of course, if you're very stressed out, whether you're drinking alcohol or not, that's going to affect your sex drive. Because nature really wants you either to be, nature wants you to survive. So it wants you birthing babies, or it wants you running away from bears. So you're not going to, nature doesn't like you to do both at the same time. So if you're threatened by bears, we're going to make it so that you favor cortisol, so that you can have the energy to get up and go and run away from whatever danger there is going on. So it could be bears. It could be marauding invaders. It could be deadlines and getting kids to karate and sword practice and plays and church functions and synagogue functions and Boy Scouts and all those kinds of things. So that's stress, too.
Urban assault, Mom.
Yeah, that. So if you got that going on, you have high cortisol, you're going to be taking your progesterone and turning it into cortisol, because it's easy two-step process to turn progesterone into cortisol. And you're not going to have as much progesterone. You're not going to feel as relaxed. And you're not going to have as much of a sex drive. All of your hormones are going to be shunted towards making cortisol, your DHEA, which can give you a sex drive, and your testosterone, but mostly the progesterone. The progesterone is the first to go, because progesterone is the progestation. Listen to the word progesterone. It is progestation. So that hormone favors gestation. It is a hormone that you make in spades when you're pregnant, and the placenta makes lots of it. And the progesterone makes you calm and relaxed. And the more calm and relaxed you are, the better your sex drive is going to be. And the what testosterone you have can have its effect, as well as your DHEA. And then you can have a nice sex drive and you want to be with your partner, which is terrific. However, if you're very stressed, the progesterone is going to get turned into cortisol, and you're going to be able to do your fight or flight. Now, if you drink alcohol, again, you're not going to be able to manage your hormones as well. And so because the liver is a place where hormones are either labeled for excretion or they're not. They're managed, they're synthesized, and your levels of hormones are regulated. So when you have alcohol on board, again, the liver is not as available to manage those things either. So you don't have as good you don't have as good hormonal function, so it reduces sex drive too. Also, again, there's the whole issue of the B complex. So B complex, various B vitamins help with regulation of reproductive hormones, especially vitamin B6, and vitamin B6 is involved in alcohol detoxification. So if your B6, if your body sees alcohol, it's going to send that B6 to the alcohol detoxification, and it's not going to manage your reproductive hormones as well. So it's very interesting, and I was really grateful to Megyn Kelly for presenting it like that and having the women she had on her show present it that way. But what was interesting to me was some of the science. They didn't go into a lot of the science of how of what the alcohol is actually doing in the body. So I thought I would speak to that because I thought it was interesting.
I'm sure you will.
Yeah.
Because,
you know, science.
Right. It's science.
Yes.
Franny, she's a science geek.
I am.
You are.
I like science. So if you're not sure, what I want to say is if you're one of those women who are in the meme and you drink your wine to relax, I am not judging you. I am like, hey, sister, good glass of wine, it's a good thing. You just watch out and don't do too much of it. You may or may not need to go dry, like I said. If you're drinking 4 glasses of wine most nights of the week, you might want to cut back to 1, if possible. And that, you know, if you have 1 glass of wine every other night and then pick a night that's going to be particularly stressful. Just know that if you find that you're really stressed out and tired and that you're not sleeping well and that you're gaining weight and your thyroid's not working well, it could be the alcohol. And if you cut back on the alcohol, it can make a big difference. Not that you have to get rid of it completely, because a little alcohol, if you're already drinking, is good for you. We know this, that, you know, people who drink a little bit of alcohol have better cardiovascular profiles. They're happier. And if they drink red wine, they have better cardiovascular health and they get the antioxidant benefits. And it's okay. It's just a matter of content, of quantity. All right. So thought I'd share that with you. All right. Remember, this is a call-in talk show. So if you want to call in and comment and talk to me, the number to call is 860-486-9487. That's 860-486-9487. Ron would love to talk to you. He would love to pick up the phone and get your questions and comments. You can also write me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. So let's see if anybody wrote. Nope, nobody wrote yet. That's okay. All right. So what I wanted to do is get into a few more. I wanted to get into a few more antioxidants and talk about those. So this is going to be a less. My concern about talking about the alcohol piece is that it will be seen as judgy. And I really am not sitting in judgment of people who are very stressed and have a lot going on and trying to get kids from here to there and trying to have a life themselves and trying to take care of themselves and not always making it to do that. So I just want to give you the information so you can make a good decision and understand that if you're having issues with those health concerns, that it could be that the alcohol could be affecting you. All right. So let's talk about tea. We're gonna switch over to tea now. Why tea is good for you? So
yeah, what's with that?
Yeah, when I'm talking about tea, I'm talking about the plant Camellia sinensis. I'm not talking about herbal tea for the moment. Right now, we're just talking about that plant. So the weird thing about the American or the English language is that we have this word tea, T-E-A, and when we say tea. Tea means a drink that you have that's made from a plant that's not coffee. And it could be any plant. And we use the word tea. Unfortunately, in the American language, we don't distinguish between this plant, Camellia sinensis, which is known as the tea plant, and other plants that we use and we drink tea. In French, they have a different word. So if you're drinking... If you're drinking tea, the word is they, tea, you know, like it's spelled like the. And if you are having what we call herbal tea, you know, so it's made of hibiscus or it's made of lavender, it's made of chamomile, it's made of, you know, nettles. They have a different word for that. It's called tisane, which I think is very useful. And I wish we had that in English because then you would know what you're talking about. Because when I say tea, people get confused about whether tea has caffeine. If I say, so people will actually ask me, does chamomile tea have caffeine in it? And I have to explain to them, no, that generally tisane does not have caffeine in it. However, that could go afield because what if you're drinking yerba mate and what if you're drinking guayusa? Those are both teas that we would have in English. They're not coffee because coffee is a specific plant. And the word we would use for a hot infusion of those plants would be tea. You're having guayusa tea or you're having yerba mate tea. And It's very interesting. So you're not, again, there's no word for it. And those have caffeine in them. So they would be considered to be herbal teas, and yet they have caffeine. And they're not Camellia sinensis, the plant that we associate with tea. So that's kind of, so be careful of that. Just know that there are plants that you can make tea out of that have caffeine in them, that are not tea, you know, Camellia sinensis. So when I keep saying Camellia sinensis, what am I talking about? Well, what I'm talking about is Camellia sinensis is the plant where that makes white tea, green tea, oolong tea, black tea. And then there are varieties of all of those things. And so that's really interesting. So white tea is the, it's the, when you, pick the leaves of the plant before they've opened up. So you pick them at the very early stage in their development. So they have little white fuzzies on them, little white hairs, and that's white tea. And white tea has the least amount of caffeine in it, and it has the most polyphenols and antioxidant abilities and things like cancer fighting ability and antioxidants. So then there's green tea, which is mostly studied. And green tea, again, has to be picked at a specific point in the tea plant's life. But green tea is when the leaves have unfurled. Now they're opened up, and you can pick the tea leaves at that time. And then the tea leaves are lightly steamed most of the time. And then now you have green tea. And that's what green tea is. If you then take that green tea, which has been lightly steamed, and you pulverize it, and you have a powder, that is matcha. That's what matcha is. Matcha is green tea powder.
Okay.
That's what it is, right? Okay. And matcha, if you want to get antioxidants from green tea, you're going to get the most from matcha. And it's really simple. The reason is with matcha, you're actually consuming the tea. Whereas if you make a cup of green tea with a tea bag, you're just making an infusion.
Sure.
And you're getting the constituents that are dissolving into the hot water. Whereas with matcha, you're just swallowing it down. You're eating the tea. You're stirring that matcha in and you're drinking it down. So matcha is a nice thing to add. Some people add matcha to their smoothies. You can make black. You can make tea out of it. You can make a latte out of it. I love matcha lattes. You can make an ice creamy drink out of it. You can get matcha ice cream. It's good.
Yeah.
I like it.
You particularly like matcha.
I do.
Yeah. Now, green tea has caffeine, right?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Does matcha have caffeine?
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay. Is it intense or is it, how does it hit you?
It depends
because
on the person.
You are affected by caffeine.
I'm very affected by caffeine. So the thing with tea, so when you have green tea and white tea, green tea, oolong tea, black tea, they all have caffeine in them, unless they've been decaffeinated. But the plant, by nature, has caffeine in it.
Okay.
So how does it affect you? Well, it depends on how sensitive you are to caffeine and how many milligrams of caffeine are in your cup. So tea tends to have, on the whole, less caffeine than coffee. So a standard 8-ounce cup of coffee. Now, coffee varies in a cup, how much caffeine it has in it. So, and it depends on how you brewed it. So if you brewed your coffee with only a little bit of coffee, it's going to have less caffeine. If you brew your coffee with a lot of coffee, it's going to have more. So you know how they talk about Starbucks, how Starbucks seems to have extra caffeine in it?
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, oh, they add caffeine to it. That's not what's going on. It's just when they make your cup of coffee, they use more coffee.
More beans, yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
And the roast makes a difference too, doesn't it? Doesn't a lighter roast have more caffeine
that's
than a darker
right.
roast?
That's correct. Hmm. Yes, the longer you roast coffee, the less caffeine it has. So your espresso roast actually has less caffeine in it than your blonde roasts. It's exact, or that your breakfast blends that are mild tasting. And that's why it's a good breakfast blend. You have it first thing in the morning, it gives you that jolt. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas your espresso, you could have a little later in the day if you want to for a little extra energy and has less caffeine per unit volume in it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of interesting. So, you know, your cup of coffee can vary depending on who's making it and how much coffee is in it. But a standard cup of coffee, you often talk about 120 milligrams of caffeine. A standard cup of green tea, you usually, and again, this can vary, but your standard cup of green tea is going to have about 60 milligrams of caffeine. So about half the caffeine of coffee.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be less caffeine in white tea and green tea than in black tea because the fermentation process brings out more caffeine, makes more caffeine available. And that's how it works. So the neat thing about tea, though, is it doesn't only have... So you find with coffee, you get just a straight-up buzz from coffee. And if you're like me and, you know, you're very sensitive to caffeine, you have a slow CYP1A2, coffee's going to give you a jolt as soon as you start drinking it. But with tea is neat because it has a chemical in it called theanine. And theanine, you know, thea from tea, theasinensis, you know, it's, or camellia sinensis. Theanine is a constituent from tea that is calming. And you can actually buy extracts of theanine that help with anxiety. And so when you're getting that buzz from your caffeine, from your tea, it can be mitigated by the theanine that's in it. So I find when I drink tea, it doesn't give me as much of a jolt, and it gives me more sustained energy than coffee does. Or coffee just gives me a rush right away, and it can, if I drink enough of it, it can make me very uncomfortable. Doesn't, and enough could be, you know, 8 to 12 ounces of full strength coffee. It's too much.
She's very entertaining on caffeine.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah,
it's
like you can pay for admission for this because it's really very entertaining.
I'm actually entertaining on a variety of substances. Yeah, I'm sort of entertaining on that glass of wine. I'm entertaining on that cup of coffee.
Yeah.
And we won't talk about the other stuff.
Okay.
Right. So there's a lot of nice phytochemicals in tea. So mind you, so oolong tea is you take green tea now and you ferment it part way and you get oolong tea, which is often, you know, called Chinese tea, has a different flavor than straight up black tea. And then you have your black tea. Black tea has been fermented further. And so then now the quality of tea can vary widely. So depending on what tea you're getting, it can taste really great and it can taste yucky. And if you're getting a lower quality tea, it's usually because they're not the part of the plant that they're using. They may be throwing stems and twigs and the whole leaf, and they're not using the best leaves or the best parts of the leaves. Also, when you hear of tea labeled Orange Pekoe or Assam or Ceylon or Darjeeling, it's speaking to where and how they're grown. So they're different strains. It's the same plant, but it's where and how they're grown. They taste different. Darjeeling has a flowery, sweet taste to it. Assam has a bold taste to it. And I was explained that Pearl, who's a lovely woman, a lovely local woman who is all about tea, she explained to me that Assam is the strain of tea that people who drink coffee like to drink. And I love a good cup of Assam. It is very bold. And I enjoy that. When you get your English breakfast tea, it's usually a mixture of Assam and Ceylon. Ceylon is milder and mellower. I think there's more caffeine in Assam than there is in Ceylon. And so, but together, pretty much they make English breakfast tea. And there's some variations if you're going to have Irish breakfast tea and Scottish breakfast tea. There's a few tweaks that you do. But your basic English breakfast tea is going to have some combination of Assam and Ceylon in it. And to me, it tastes really good. I, you know, we're a cup of coffee. Coffee, I really have to be in the mood for. And because it's got so much caffeine, sometimes I don't want it. I never find tea. I always would love a good cup of tea. I just resonate with tea more, probably because it has that calming effect and it has those wonderful polyphenols, which make my somewhat naturally sluggish liver more active. So it's nice. So tea can do some nice things for you, whether you use green, whether you use extract or you use black tea. There have been studies that show that the catechins in green tea. So green tea has a major constituent called EGCG, epigallocatechin gallate. And it's a wonderful antioxidant. It's the active ingredient in green tea, and it's a terrific antioxidant. It helps with gene expression, and when you're talking about fighting cancer, that's the compound that you're looking for. So the catechins, including the EGCG, can increase your body's ability to burn fat as a fuel, and so you get more muscle endurance. So throwing some green tea in your water bottle on your bike could be helpful. I've been doing this guayuse. Maybe I should do green tea.
That powder, that matcha powder.
Matcha, absolutely.
There
people
you go.
Do
Put
that.
Matcha powder in your water bottle.
Perfect. Have a friend who's an Ironman triathlete, and one of his favorite things to throw in his water bottle is matcha. So he keeps the matcha and he throws it in with a bunch of other things. Mm. So when you drink tea, you can reduce the risk of heart attack, and it helps to protect against cardiovascular and degenerative diseases. Again, probably because of its antioxidants. The polyphenols in tea are powerful antioxidants. Also, there's been studies on protection against a lot of different cancers: breast, colon, colorectal, skin, lung, esophagus. Anywhere that the tea touches, it's going to help to prevent cancer. I've had people who have skin cancer, and they're putting things on the skin cancer, like where they're having a little bit of surgery, or maybe they're not going to entirely have surgery. Sometimes a squamous cell carcinoma on your skin, if it's small, they might just give you 5-FU, 5-fluorouracil, to put on topically, which is topical chemotherapy. Hmm. So I'll tell those people, you can use your 5-FU, but at the same time, 5-FU is going to chew up your skin. So I'll tell you what, let's use some calendula cream. And what I'd like you to do is get some matcha, have them stir matcha into the calendula cream and put that on. So you actually put the matcha on topically.
So you have nice little green dots on your face.
Yeah, you do. But so
but that's
what?
That's okay. If it's working, it's great.
Well, that's the wonderful thing. And two things you can mix to do if you have topical cancers or topical precancerous lesions is you can take a little coconut oil or calendula cream and then throw in some turmeric powder and some green and matcha and then put it on topically. And those are great antioxidants and they fight cancer. So if you're worried about a lesion, you could do that. So, other cancers too, pancreas, liver, ovarian, prostate, oral cancers. So it can help with all of those things. Of course, you want to do all of the other things you need to do to help to fight cancer, but it can help with that. I already said tea can help fight free radicals. It's high oxygen radical absorbance, which is ORAC. It helps to destroy free radicals that can damage your DNA. So it's going to help with healthy gene expression. So we're not, we have antioxidant systems in our bodies, but we were also meant to eat food. And one of the benefits of eating food is when you eat food, especially plants, plants have lovely antioxidants in them. So they help to support your body against oxidative damage. And in everyday metabolism, when you just do stuff, you're going to break down muscle tissue and you need to rebuild. So when you have free radical scavengers on board, it's going to help with that. When you drink tea, you're drinking water too. So you're hydrating. You are more hydrated. So you get all the benefits of having adequate hydration, including every organ and muscle and tissue in your body is going to function better. You're going to get less headaches. Your kidneys are going to work better, all kinds of stuff. Guess what? Tea is linked with a lower risk of Parkinson's disease. Regular tea drinking, when you consider, smoking, physical activity and stuff, regular tea drinking was associated with a lower risk of Parkinson's disease. It might provide protection from ultraviolet rays. And when you drink it, it's going to help because you're going to have more antioxidants on board. But also, you can get lotions that have green tea in them. They're kind of hard to find. And if you want to have a lotion with green tea in it, it might be a good idea to, as I said, get matcha. Get your favorite lotion and stir it in. And yes, you're going to look a little green when you have it. But if you don't mind that, it's okay. It helps with weight loss. It helps with waist circumference. If you regular consume hot tea, you might have lower BMI and a smaller waist than people who don't consume hot tea. And also lowers the risk of metabolic syndrome, where you have diabetes and arterial disease and stroke. So there's an association there as well. Also, it may affect the negative effects of smoking, which is why you see less oral and esophageal and stomach cancers in Japan, where they smoke a lot, but they also drink a lot of green tea.
And they use a lot of turmeric too, don't they?
They do, mm-hmm. Yeah. But they drink a lot of green tea. Also with type 2 diabetes, because it's going to help with how your liver processes essential fats. It's going to help with your liver processing of glycogen and sugars. And So because the polyphenols just help your liver to work better. It helps you recover from radiation. So radiation, that's going to be when you've been exposed to it, when you get sunburn, and also when you, if you've had radiation therapy for cancer, it can help you bounce back because of all those antioxidants. And also green tea, if you want something natural to help you with bone density, you've been diagnosed with osteoporosis or osteopenia, it can help your bone density. Yippee.
Wow.
And also neurological diseases, which makes sense because, again, there's a couple ways it's going to do that. Because of the free radical scavenging abilities, it's going to help to reduce atherosclerosis. So you're going to have less you're going to have less neurodegeneration in the brain because you're going to have adequate circulation to the brain. Also, those free radicals are going to help with healthy gene expression. So if you have genes that are expressing tau proteins and the proteins in the amyloid plaques that happen in Alzheimer's disease, you're going to be less likely to express those as well. And so it affects the brain, the parts of the brain that affect learning and memory. It's going to affect the whole brain, but you're going to think better if you have tea on board.
It seems like we should be drinking gallons of green tea.
Sure, okay.
Okay.
But I mean, and it doesn't have to be green. It could be white or black too.
Okay.
I mean, because you're still going to get the polyphenols and all of those things, and you're going to get the theanines. The neat thing about black tea has more tannins in it, and tannins are antimicrobial, so they fight against yeast and fungus and other bacteria.
Wow.
So they can all be helpful.
Yay tea.
Yeah. So I didn't realize this, that if you drink a lot of hot drinks, a lot of heat in your esophagus can boost your risk of esophageal cancer. I didn't know that.
No way.
Yeah. So.
Well, that's good.
If you consume super hot things, everybody reacts differently to all these things. So tea is going to be helpful for a lot of these things. So it's something you can definitely try, and it's definitely been studied to improve your health. All right, so I really went off on we went off on wine and we went off on tea, which is very cool. All right, so now let me see. Do we want to do cocoa or do we want to do acai? I think we'll finish today with acai, and then we'll talk about cocoa next week, and then we'll do some more. You know, this will be a little antioxidant series. Okay, so let's go to acai, and I was sitting with my dear friend Rita. And I was talking to Rita about acai. I said, I really love acai bowls. That's my new favorite thing. And she said, you do know that we pronounce it acai with the accent on the E. I said, okay. So I got told by a native Portuguese speaker that you need to, and it's Brazilian Portuguese because they don't really grow acai in Portugal. It's really... it's a rainforest fruit, so they grow it in Brazil. And so, and the word is Portuguese because, they speak Portuguese in Brazil. So acai is very popular in Brazil, and the Portuguese or the Brazilians laugh at us for thinking it's such a great superfood because it's like us, you know, touting the benefits of blueberries, which we do, but blueberries are really easy to grow in the U.S., and so are strawberries. But down there... really, acai, where we think of it, acai as an exotic, you know, super fruit, it's really as common as apples and blueberries and strawberries up here. It's really, it's something they have all the time. So acai has lots of antioxidants that help you build your immune system up, protects your cells against free radicals. It's high in fiber. So fiber is always good for you because fiber is going to it's going to draw toxins out of your body. And it also provides a substrate for healthy probiotics to grow. And acai or fiber in general keeps your blood sugar more steady because when you consume foods with fiber in them, sugars are absorbed more slowly, so your blood sugar is going to be more steady. There's also fats in acai. Acai's are kind of fatty. So there are omega-3 fatty acids in acai. And so that when you taste an acai, it's a little strange. It's like a berry, but it's also fatty. It's a little odd. It's almost chocolatey. It's when you eat it, you're not expecting what it is. And I've had it. I had a piece of, and I say back when people were selling Mona V. I don't know if people are still doing that, but there was this product called Mona V, and it was a product that you could get multi-level marketed, and it had a bunch of acai in it. And somebody was selling it, and they gave me a piece of actual acai fruit to try. Mm-hmm. And it was weird. It was like a...
How weird is weird?
It was like a fatty berry. It's like you looked at it, and it looked like a plum. But then when you bit into it, you didn't get what you expected. It's like eating a plum that's a nut. It's weird. It's because it's fatty.
I'm lost.
It's a little fatty tasting. It's very strange. Hmm.
Was it soft and fleshy? Was it?
It was a little fleshy, texture? But it was also fatty.
Okay.
Yeah. It was weird.
Was it like you were biting into a stick of butter?
No, it was like you're biting into a plum, but it was oily. Yeah.
Avocado?
No, an avocado is really like an avocado, but I think of eating an avocado, it's definitely, you definitely feel like you're eating a nut, but it's soft and it's like a mushy nut.
Yeah.
You know, it's very nutty tasting, and a really good avocado has a beautiful nutty, creamy consistency.
Yeah.
This wasn't
but
that.
But it's a little fatty also.
Don't
you think?
What?
Avocados
absolutely.
Are a little fatty?
A little fatty. It's extremely fatty.
Okay.
Yeah, they have lots of monounsaturated fats in them and also fiber. But no, this is different because avocados, when you spoon out avocado flesh, it's mushy, you know, and you can actually take it out and spread it. This wasn't like that. This was more of the texture of a plum, but greasy. That's how I would describe it. It's also high in calcium. So anything you need calcium for, the function of your bones, your heart, your muscles, your nerves. And there are, it can be helpful with cardiovascular disease because of the antioxidants that are in it. Also can be helpful for, it can also be helpful for fighting cancer because of the antioxidants. It can be helpful for weight loss, just like a lot of other fruits and vegetables are, because it's got free radicals, it's got fiber. And so if you eat those instead of eating, more concentrated starches that don't have fiber and essential fats in them, they're certainly going to be helpful. So as a berry, it has anthocyanins. So anthocyanins are these lovely compounds that are that are antioxidants, and they help to strengthen your blood vessels. And they're anti-inflammatory. So when you're drinking your tart cherry has anthocyanins in it that help to reduce inflammation. Well, this stuff does too. And again, because of the fiber and the healthy fats, it can help lower your cholesterol. There was a specific study on erectile dysfunction and acai. So that makes sense because anything that helps your blood vessels to be stronger is going to help with erectile dysfunction. The main cause of erectile dysfunction is cardiovascular disease. One of the first signs of cardiovascular disease for most guys, it's a cardiovascular issue. One of the first signs that you may have cardiovascular disease is erectile dysfunction. If you have acai berries, and so I have to say that acai is going to be helpful for that. There was this specific study on acai and erectile dysfunction. That's going to be the mechanism because the fiber is going to help to reduce cholesterol, and the antioxidants are going to help to clean out your arteries and strengthen the blood vessels. But you're going to get that effect with anything that's high in antioxidants and, you know, anthocyanins. So your tart cherries, your Bing cherries, your blueberries, your raspberries, your strawberries, your blackberries are all going to help with that as well. And, you know, when we give people supplements that help with erectile dysfunction, that's what we're looking for. They'll have a bunch of those berry extracts in them, and they might also have this neat stuff called diasmin in it, which is a plant extract that's a bioflavonoid that definitely helps with circulation. And so acai, they call it an anti-aging fruit. And again, because it's high in antioxidants and fiber and blood sugar regulation, it's all helpful. So in the U.S., when you get acai here, you're probably not going to find them fresh. They spoil very quickly. So the way to get your acai is going to be frozen. So you're going to have to get them at the health food store or order them, you know, when if they're shipped to you, they're going to be in a frozen pack. So you buy them in the health food store. Now, you have to, and there can be, or they can be like hermetically sealed. So you can get, there are different companies that sell acai. And you can get them packaged in such a way that they're going to be preserved. Now, just be aware that if you buy acai, sometimes acai products can have guarana included with them. So guarana is a plant that has a lot of caffeine in it. So if you don't want guarana in your acai, be careful and make sure you're buying an acai that's just acai. So because you can take the acai and you can make these wonderful smoothies with them. They go great in a smoothie. And then you can get nice recipes for acai bowls. And basically an acai bowl is where you do this neat thing where you blend acai with perhaps some protein powder. There's different recipes for acai, but the basic acai bowl is going to have, you're going to blend up some acai, possibly banana if you like it, and some protein powder. I would throw some cocoa powder in there too, because I think that cocoa and acai, they make a nice combination. And you blend them up and you make it into a pudding-like consistency, and then you sprinkle stuff on top. My favorite kinds of stuff to sprinkle on top are going to be a bit of shredded coconut, goji berries, crunchy cacao nibs, other berries, dried cranberries, any dried fruit. If you go to a place that makes smoothies and you order an acai bowl, usually they'll make the basic acai and it'll have, I need to say acai. It's going to have your acai, some protein powder, and perhaps banana in the pudding part. And then you'll get a choice of three toppings. And if you're home, you can put on as many toppings as you want. You heard it here. Okay. So that's...
I stepped out for a minute. What are we putting toppings on?
We're putting it on our acai bowl.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Delicious. So if you want to try an acai bowl, one place to do that, there's many places, but your favorite juice bar is going to have them. I'm not sure if you can get it at Whole Foods, but you can definitely get them at Not Only Juice in mm-hmm. Willimantic. They have a unicorn bowl, and their unicorn bowl is, in fact, an acai bowl.
Okay.
So, and I had one there, and I liked it. It was good.
Good.
Yeah, but I think I'm going to buy some frozen acai or some, you know, hermetically sealed acai. Because mm-hmm. acai is, they spoil, the fresh acai spoils, and they grow in Brazil. So you have to get them frozen or sealed. So
okay.
That's what you do. All right. Well, that was fun.
Well, you have a list of things on here. We may have to hit these up next week.
We're not hitting them up today because it's done. It's
right.
Time.
I understand. But, I mean, there's still so many more of the things that we can talk about.
I know. So we'll do that. We'll keep going.
Put that on
All right. Hold. Well, thank you so much for listening to Radio Naturopath. This is a call-in talk show about health and natural medicine. I'm Fran Storch-ND, naturopathic physician with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can also email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcasts at whus.org. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram, at Fran Storch ND. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. Remember to eat your veggies. We'll be back with Radio Naturopath, with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Storrs.